MMB is.
You went in. I would track it, but it would be zero.
Call the conference committee on House File 2244 to order. Thank you for joining us again, members. In front of you at your places, we do have the final language for our proposal. Do we have any comments, discussion on the language before us? Members, I guess we have a quick conversation going out in the hall here we're waiting for, just to make sure we have everything buttoned up with one of our House members. We will take a motion on this as soon as possible. Senator Carlson.
Well, Mr. Chair, while we're waiting for some of the other members, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank you and Representative O'Driscoll for chairing this and for pulling the hard work. I know that maybe sometimes I wasn't as easy to get along with as you would have liked, but I think the final product, Mr. Chair and Representative O'Driscoll, I think is a really good product, and I really want to thank you for your diligence on this and your perseverance on this. And I certainly don't want to leave out Representative Dietrich for all of her years of working so hard for our school kids. I really think that our final product is quite outstanding. So thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
As long as Senator Carlson got it started, I too want to express thanks, I think particularly to Representative Dietrich, who kind of honed in on this issue. For all the years I've been here, there were many years where this was so under the radar that nobody was really had any comprehension or understanding of, I think, the significance and what it could mean if our trustee obligations were upheld. And I appreciate that the blinds have come off and exposed the realities that we need to come to grips with and what our legislative responsibilities are in relation to that. And I think these looks like we've got some very positive steps that aren't throwing the baby out with the bathwater, but at the same time introducing some elements that hopefully will assure that we'll go forward in a way that will maximize the corpus of that trust and ultimately the revenues that will go to support the children's education. Well, thank you very much.
Senator Carlson.
And Mr. Chair, I'm remiss. I also wanted to thank staff for the absolutely phenomenal job of getting all of that we did in 4 hours last night put together for us so quickly. So thank you, staff.
And with that, I would ask if there are questions. You've all had an opportunity to review. If you need any clarifications on the items, I don't think we probably need to do another walkthrough. We did that a couple times. Language should be pretty familiar to members of the committee. But again, I would ask if there are questions on any of the items for clarification as the final, I think, explanations and things are occurring out in the hallway at this time.
A couple of language changes. We struck out some things.
Representative Simon.
Mr. Chair, yeah, so I assume we're going to have a full and final comment from DNR. Is that?
That is part of my anticipation. I think those are some of the things that are transpiring out in the hall just for clarification purposes. But I was not asked to participate in that conversation, nor did I welcome myself into that conversation.
Well, then let me just say, Mr. Chair, I also want to thank everyone who was involved in the conference committee and Representative Dietrich. I know you've really been a real leader on this issue, and I've, like as I said before, I've watched your work and others from afar on this. I haven't been really intimately involved with this, but I was proud to be part of this conference committee, and I think it's good work. And I also want to thank the staff too, who I know really pulled some close, semi all-nighters. crack of dawn, a great personal sacrifice, so I want to thank you.
Thank you, Representative Simon. One of the things that I will mention as well, this particular bill, both Senator Cruz and myself are first-term members of our respective bodies, and when we both got here, we learned about the land trust and what it is and how it works, and again, a lot of that goes back to folks like Representative Dietrich on the House side, Representative McFarland, excuse me, as well as Representative Downey. They have been keeping the flame lit in the storms and in the winds and things on this. And last year, as one of our omnibus bills was working its way through the floor for debate, Representative Dietrich said that she was wanting to put an amendment on that would deal with this type of a thing, and she offered it, and we had some discussion on it. And to the credit of Representative McNamara, who's not here right now, but he had made a promise to Representative Dietrich and a promise to myself and to others, as did Education Finance Chair Garofalo, that if we withdrew that amendment, that it would not be something that would be done in vain, that they would champion and get behind us to move this issue forward this session. And they have been nothing but supportive. And Representative McNamara, all the way along, he's been a key player for us in the conference committee and continues to do good work out in the hall to make sure that everybody has comfort on this. I'd also like to thank our House conferees, Representative Simon, Representative McElfactrick, Representative Dietrich, and again, Representative McNamara, for their hard work on this and the willingness to step up and do some things for the kids at this point. We also have staff that I'd like to thank on the House side as well as the Senate side. And one of the people who from the community has been very, very big on in helping move this forward is Grace Kelleher with the School Board Association, and also a member of what may at some point become the defunct Advisory Council in place of the Legislative Commission that we've talked about. So again, thank you to everyone who's really rolled up their sleeves for the kids here in the state of Minnesota. And as Representative Dietrich and I have always said, it's for the kids, it's not for us.
Title's in the back.
Representative Dietrich.
Mr. Chairman, I'll just say a couple of things. First of all, there's just a couple of things that I would like to say. And first of all is, you know, we first became enlightened on this issue when Senator Wieger got appointed to the Permanent School Fund Advisory Committee. And he said, I don't know what I'm supposed to do on that committee. And so he had the wherewithal to call the DNR. We went on a two-day trip up north, and at that point I had been assigned to a work group on the school trust lands. So I can't take credit for my initial interest in this. It was definitely Senator Wieger who initiated that trip with the DNR, and he invited me along. And Senator Olson went, and Ms. Kelleher went also on her own dime. The Minnesota School Board Association didn't even pay for her trip. She went up and paid for the trip herself because she said that's just something that I knew that I needed to become more educated on. And so it was it really all evolved from that trip. And our biggest revelation when we realized that there needed to be some changes is that when we realized that every child in this state has in when they enter the public school system, they have inherited a trust fund, and that it produces dividends and interest every year, and it goes towards their education every year. And that is really just such a patriotic thing when you think about it, that the founding fathers of this country knew that public education was going to be important enough for this democracy and for this state that they were going to figure out how to find how to fund it into the future. And I admire their vision, and I don't know, well, I'll just leave it at that. So the other thing that I did want to just mention is that Senator Olson is leaving now, but this is today. It was very emotional at the Education Conference Committee because they talked about the fact that this would be her last conference committee, and I should have said something, but this is going to be her last conference committee, and I would say it is as visionary as what the Founding Fathers had intended 150 years ago, and so I'm very pleased that you're able to be a part of this to the end. Thank you.
Members in the audience, we're just going to go into a short recess while the Senate is voting right now. So we're just in a short recess. We'll try and give you an update in a few minutes.
Tired and
no, he's paying the fair.
I'm going to go in and I'm going to have you go first.
Thank you, members. I appreciate the opportunity for that brief recess. We're still kind of trying to work out some concerns here. In just a minute, we will ask the commissioner to come to the table and go through a few brief items that he has remaining in the language. But before we do that, I was hoping Mr. Mueller has a fiscal impact sheet for us, and I believe that's being passed out right now. Mr. Mueller.
Mr. Chairman, there's a sheet being passed out now that there are a couple different revenue items that we will have to track as a result of this bill, and it was a provision that was originally in the Senate bill where we are not now certifying the fire protection costs on the permanent school forest land. This will have an impact on the general fund on the revenue side of a negative $2 million per year, and that money would then be credited to the permanent school fund. So it's just a shift in where revenue is. It's not a shift in any expenditures. But the general fund will see $2 million less per year in revenue starting in fiscal year 14. And then as far as all the new expenses go with the new director, the commission costs, and any other staff that are hired, with the amendment that we adopted last night, those costs will be determined by future legislatures and how much they appropriate for that. So we're not tracking any specific costs for those staff members or the commission because that'll happen, and we don't even know which funds that will come from. So I have a note here just saying there will be costs, but those will be determined by future legislatures. So the only thing we're going to be tracking overall is the change in revenue of $2 million per year between the general fund and the permanent school fund. I just want to make sure members were aware of that, especially House members, since that was something that was not in the House bill originally.
Thank you, Mr. Mueller. Any questions from the members? Seeing no questions, at this time I'd like to invite Commissioner Landwehr up to the table. Representative McNamara.
No, Mr. Chair, at some point I have some questions for the DNR.
Welcome to the table, Mr. Commissioner. If you could introduce yourself for the tape, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Tom Landwehr. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources.
Thank you for joining us. We had a brief opportunity to talk outside during our recess. I understand that there are a couple of things that you'd like to discuss with us concerning the bill. Go ahead.
Please, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for that. This is a relatively short bill, but it obviously is a huge change, and there's a lot of complexities to this. So we have not had a lot of time, my staff, to look at this. I don't want to rush through this because I don't want to overlook anything, but staff have brought some concerns to my attention, and I was supposed to meet with the governor's staff this afternoon, was not able to, so I have not yet had a chance to discuss thoroughly with the governor's office as well. But I want to point out some things that we have, my staff have identified that we want to bring to your attention. And, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to start on page 7, Chairman, and looking at Section 8. The issue was raised to me about Section 8, and in particular Subdivision B and D, is that these subdivisions could set us up with a scenario let me give you a scenario. We've got a trout stream that runs through a trust forest. Under our current best management practices, we would leave a riparian buffer for that trout stream so we don't degrade the trout stream. Staff have raised the spectacle that if we take this to the limit, we will take every tree and ignore the value of the trout stream. It appears to override all of the current language that says consistent with sound natural resource policies, especially parts B and D, as I mentioned. So I raise that as an issue. It appears to override, if not directly, gravity, the existing statute that says we shall manage school trust lands consistent with sound natural resource policy. I raise that as an issue, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, we talked about this with Representative O'Driscoll on page, jumping around a little bit here, but I'm going to go to page 9, line 9.24 to 9.26. This requires that the director submit a budget to the legislature before he submits it to the governor. Since this is an executive branch position, it's more appropriate to submit it to the governor before it goes to the legislative branch. And then two sections that are connected, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Subdivision 4, very last subdivision, or the top subdivision on page 10, talks about the director submitting recommendations for school trust land lease, sale, or exchange to the Commissioner of Natural Resources and the Legislative Permanent School Fund Commission, which is then referenced, Mr. Chairman, on page 8 under the appeals process. And the issue that was raised to me is this appears to put the director in the role of submitting individual projects for consideration. So an individual tract or an individual lease or individual projects, rather than at the macro level of suggesting program direction, that the department should look at selling certain riparian lands, or the department should look at leasing forests as a new thing. This gets that director very much in the position of day-to-day management activities, and we just think that that is absolutely not workable, Mr. Chairman, and would just tie us up in knots, quite frankly. Reviewing the activities, advising under this framework and the strategic plan about the types of activities that ought to be done, reviewing the leases that have been done, the revenues that have been done, that high-level oversight is more of the approach that I've had in mind since we've been talking about this. This gets into the brass tacks of projects. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, those are my biggest concerns right now. I will offer that I think the governor has got some issues with respect to the budgeting and the constitutional issue on the funding on the end, but I haven't had a chance to discuss directly with him.
All right, members,
Mr. Chairman, I'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Commissioner Landwehr. And I think, members, maybe the best way to handle this is just take these one concern at a time. So if that's all right with you, Commissioner, maybe we can open up a discussion on each of these. Why don't we start that discussion off on page 7, section 8. We are looking at lines 7.22 to lines 7.32. If we could just take these one at a time, Commissioner, if you could go ahead and just reiterate one more time what your concerns are with that specific section, and then we'll open up for conversation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. The current statutes around management of school trust lands require that we manage consistent with sound natural resource policies. That's been pointed out many times to the folks in this group. This language appears to set aside the consistent with sound natural resource management policies. For instance, under B, subdivision B, not for any purpose inconsistent with the best interests of the trust beneficiaries, and shall be liberally construed under item D, would appear to say that there is one purpose only, and that is irrespective of sound natural resource management policies, which is what the current language says. So the scenario that was put up in front of me, and Mr. Chairman, if I could, part of, I think, what we need to do when we look at this language is not just consider the philosophy of the language, but put some scenarios in front of us to see what this would do in real-life situations. And so the situation that was presented to me, Mr. Chairman, is we have a section of school trust land that has a trout stream running through it. And as you all know, trout streams are rare and highly valued in the state. Under our current best management practices, whereby we are managing school trust lands consistent with sound natural resource policies, we will manage a buffer around those trout streams, and we will put special stream crossings in so that we don't damage that stream. Under this language, it may suggest that we should not leave a buffer because that is revenue that could be immediately obtained. It may suggest that we don't need to be careful crossing that trout stream because that will cost more and reduce the revenue to the trust. So, Mr. Chairman, that's one scenario, and I suspect if we thought of other scenarios, we might come up with the same thing. The concern is that this overrides the consistent with sound natural resource policies provision that's currently in statute.
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner Landwehr, that statement, sound natural, that you talked about principles, natural resource principles, really, I believe, is duplicative of other current state law and federal law, whatever. You should not have to manage this land differently than, say, someone with private property that needs to follow the rules and laws of the state and the nation in regards to whatever you're doing on school trust land. We should not use that language as some reason to hold this land to a higher standard than is required on private property. And unfortunately, I think in the past that's been done. And if you're telling me you still think you need to do that, why do you think that statutory language tells you that you have to do more than what the law requires and ask everyone else to do in regards to private property?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think the best example I can give you is that there is no law that says you must leave a buffer as a private landowner, that you must leave a buffer of trees adjacent to a trout stream. That's part of our voluntary best management practices that are required to be used on state land, suggested to be used on private land, but they're not a requirement at all. And again, we leave revenue on the ground when we leave that buffer there, but it's because we're trying to protect that trout stream, which not only has value within the boundaries of that trust land, but has, by virtue of being a flowing body, has values downstream as well.
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner Landwehr. But to make it sound like you can bulldoze or take a backhoe right to the next to the shore and leave a gaping hole and the dirt and rock and everything eroding into the stream without the current law would allow that. That's not the case. If you're saying you're going to contaminate the river or have sediment in the river without leaving a buffer, doesn't current law stop you from just destroying the stream because you left no buffer? I mean, if ecologically it makes sense to leave a buffer because you're going to be breaking current law by ending up with silt and rock and everything in the stream and the trout are going to be disrupted, how could you be allowed to do that under current law?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I couldn't go into the stream with a backhoe. That would be violating law, but there's nothing in state law that prohibits me from cutting every tree up to the edge of that stream. As long as I don't drop it in the stream and go in and pick it up with heavy equipment, I can drop it on the dry land. I can take every stick of vegetation up to the edge of that stream.
Mr. Commissioner, very quickly, kind of a follow-up to that. I think what you have before you is a committee that's made up of some education folks, some environment folks. Could you take just a brief moment and give us a synopsis of shoreline regulation and how that plays in, and just so everybody's on the same page here?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, shoreline, there is a state shoreland statute under which local units of government develop their shoreland zoning. Shoreland zoning relates to development. By and large, it doesn't relate to uses of the land. Now, there certainly are municipalities like cities that will require a buffer, for instance, on a stream or a wetland, but there are no state ordinances that require a buffer on a stream or a wetland. So the shoreland rules are related primarily to development, putting a structure in.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kind of picking up on what Representative McNamara had talked about, we have several laws that protect the waters and the waterfronts, both at the federal level and the state level. If there was going to be any disturbance of topsoil or even the threat of the disturbance of topsoil in that area, silt fences would have to be erected in accordance with federal and state laws that the PCA here in the state of Minnesota enforces. I think a good case could be made that you would say we're going to put a buffer zone between that stream. Again, one example that you came up with on short notice, I'll give you the benefit of that. But I would think that you could make the case that even though there's still some standing timber that's close to the shoreline there, in the long-term production value of that land, and as you pointed out, trout streams are pretty darn scarce in the state of Minnesota and highly valued, you would be probably questioned, challenged, asked to give more of an explanation of why you cleared up to the shoreline, to the creek, and not done something to preserve the value of the creek and the asset that is such a scarce resource. So I think that there's some checks and balances of what can happen, and maybe some of those kinds of rationales, if in fact that is a question or you believe that there's a question, could be annotated or explained if asked to do with those kinds of things or deal with those. I don't know where these kinds of rules and regulations that apply to other government agencies, applies to MnDOT when they're doing different kinds of things, road work and coming into sensitive areas. It certainly would apply to private development. Why wouldn't we just continue to do those kinds of things as sound, ecological, and environmentally friendly things under law, as well as good common sense kinds of things? And I realize you can't define common sense in statute.
Mr. Chairman, Landon, members of the committee, when a person does a development project, typically they have to, and they may impact surface waters, they typically have to apply for what's called an MPDS permit. That's where the requirements are for drift fencing and other erosion control methods. Forestry practices don't require a permit, and in fact, most forestry is done in winter, so you're not typically disturbing the soil. Most cutting is done in winter. So all I'm saying, and I don't want to get hung up on this example, I just want to put the scenario in front of you as the direction this is going, but under current state law, there is nothing that says that you cannot cut right up to the edge of the trout stream. And this would appear to suggest that ought to be the primary consideration.
Now, Mr. Commissioner, just a quick question along those lines. And thank you for that explanation of the shoreline regulation and how that works. But are there, to my knowledge, and again, that's brief knowledge when it comes to some of those issues, aren't there setbacks that are required irregardless of whether it is a development project? Aren't there some that are just standing setbacks?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, setback is a term that's used in zoning, and it relates primarily to development. The only setbacks we have with respect to forestry is in our best management practices, and our BMPs, what they call site-level guidelines, which are the rules that the state has when working on state land. So it's a state, it's not a statute. The best management practices, BMPs, are voluntary on private land.
To that point, Representative McNamara. Okay. Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know why do you think that this statute here in Section 8 overrides page 3, Section 4, bullet point 4?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it's
Commissioner Landwehr.
It's because this is very prescriptive. It appears to clearly identify on very specific lands a higher standard than the generic language in Section 4. And Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, if one is in question as to which of these prevails, I don't think that is a good outcome either. If we can be clear that provision does prevail, that eliminates That eliminates the question, I think.
Representative Dietrich?
Thank you. You just said that you think it's, you know, a higher standard, and actually I think it's a lower standard, but that's, I guess, a matter of opinion. And maybe it's just because we have used this statement so many times in this discussion, maximize the revenue while maintaining sound natural resources, and that is, like, embedded in all of our minds forever. So I just wanted to point that out. I don't want anybody to think that we have taken out that language and that we have any other intentions, but we do need to balance the two. And
perhaps a
Commissioner
phrase,
Andrew.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, perhaps a section in this article that states, consistent with solid natural resource practices is not overridden, to some of that effect notwithstanding.
That might be one option.
Representative Dietrich.
Yes. Second question is, and I know this is, you're just, someday you're not going to have to deal with me, but I'm going to ask it anyhow. So on the issue of trout fishing, a trout stream that goes over school trust lands, do you sell trout fishing licenses?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we sell a trout stamp that's required in addition to a trout, in addition to a fishing license for when you are fishing on trout streams.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner. And so what is the cost of that?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, a trout stamp is $10.
And what is
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And is that the stamp or the original license?
Just the stamp.
Oh, just the stamp. And so does the school trust fund get reimbursed for any of those, for their part of the trout stream that runs through school trust lands?
Mr. Chairman, Andrew. Members of the committee, not to my knowledge. I don't know of a way that the trust fund gets reimbursed for that.
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, I think that we are going to be addressing this next legislative session, but I think that is part of the problem, because if the school trust fund were reimbursed for part of that stream, then you would have to really, before you cut any trees there, you would really have to think about this trust asset as being that trout fund also. Right now it is just a state asset and you happen to be using our land, but there is no leasing money. There is we have no financial interest in it, and so I think that's part of why we're doing this, and I look forward to the day when we're all on the same page on that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I apologize. I was kind of in the middle of the discussion, and I thought we were talking about mining and we were talking about logging, so I can get my discussion a little better centered now. In the certification, I believe most, if not all, of our state forests, including the school trust lands, are part of the certification program, and the best management practices involved with that. Do they talk at all about removing the trees on banks, on streams and such?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, in order to be certified, best management practices need to be applied. So I couldn't tell you specifically if they mention buffers, but I'm sure that is a consideration, whether it requires that the state have BMPs to address that or whether it specifically addresses it in the certification guidelines. That is the value of certification, is it ensures to the non-informed public that these lands are managed sustainably.
Representative McNamara.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner Landwehr, the state has decided that's a good idea to be in certified, to have certified forest. Sometimes it opens you up to additional markets. You can get a higher premium for some of your products. And so that's a judgment decision you've made to deliver a superior product and to be more friendly on the landscape, including things like protecting stream banks or maybe leaving some deadfalls. On the tours up north, they would talk about they had to leave a few snags here and there for the wildlife and protecting specific things. Those you do under current state law. That's not because of the language that was mentioned on page 3, managing for sound natural resource conservation and management principles. you do that because of the certification program and the best management practices?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, before there was forest certification, we had best management practices, so we were applying those to state lands prior to certification. Forest certification came along as a way for the public to know that forests were managed sustainably so that when they bought their paper or their wood, they knew they weren't, for instance, degrading a trout stream. Forest certification is voluntary. The state has agreed to get certified, actually by two different certification entities, and we've agreed to do that not because we necessarily get a premium price, but because the buyers are demanding it. So we have more markets as a result of certification. We don't necessarily get a greater price because of certification. I've been to a half a dozen mills in the last year and asked them, is there value to certification? Because certification has an expense to us. It has a cost in paying for the annual audits. It has a cost in how we do our business. And so I've asked the mills, you know, is there a reason for us to be doing this? And they have almost universally said, yes, there's value in the state being certified. It doesn't give them a premium price, but it opens markets to them. As an example, Home Depot requires that all of the products that they buy, timber products, come from certified sources. So we certify because it provides those markets. It requires that we manage sustainably. It supplements our state best management practices and site-level guidelines that we've had in place for about 20, 25 years.
Follow-up, Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Commissioner, you're saying you've already got things in place that protect those areas and do the right thing. You don't need to do more or different for school trust land. You should not be doing that. And that's the gist of this bill. We have to set it right here that we already have things in state law. You're even going beyond that. You're doing your best management practices, which you've been doing for decades. Now you have the certified forestry products that you're working at. That's already doing the things to protect those things that we want to protect. You don't need to do more than you're supposed to constitutionally. Constitutionally, we're supposed to be maximizing the benefit for the kids. Now, as an environmentalist, would I love it that every trout stream I want to fish has a 200-foot buffer on both sides? Well, I think Senator Bach and I both, as fishermen, would love that. Even Senator Carlson might like it. I'm not sure. But that's not what we're supposed to do to maximize the benefit for the kids. Do what you're supposed to do in law. We already protect. This is Minnesota. We don't let you rape and pillage the shores of a trout stream. We don't. But don't go way above and beyond and have the kids be losers under the guise that, well, we're leaving it because it makes the stream prettier. I get that. If we're going to pay for bigger buffers, we've got a RIM program. We funded it through a bunch of legacy money to protect buffers. If you've got an idea that you want more buffers on a couple of cricks in Senator Bach's district, put in a RIM application and let's do it, because that might be a great idea. But that's not what we're supposed to be doing here. And to Representative Dietrich's point, one more, $17 plus $10 is what you pay for a fishing license if you want to fish trout. And you can go on 2.5 million acres in Minnesota for free today, and it doesn't cost you a penny to do it. And as a matter of fact, a lot of times when you dock your boat, you're on school trust land. And anyway, I said enough. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, to be clear, I'm not suggesting that we need to do more than what we're doing. What I'm saying is some of my staff believe that this language would reduce our ability to use certification, would reduce our need to use best management practices. So we would be managing those lands at a lower level of environmental consideration than we are now.
Representative McNamara.
To that point, I'm not sure, Commissioner, when that was in the Constitution, but it may be as old as statehood. We're supposed to maximize the economic benefit for the kids, and we can't break the law to do that. And we even go beyond, because you want to do certified forests, which I love. Thank you for doing that. It was Governor Plenty's initiative with Senator Bach working on it years ago. It was a great move. We are supposed to be maximizing it for the kids. As an environmentalist and somebody that likes trees, sometimes that's going to mean that we cut some trees and replant and start the rotation over again sooner. That's okay. That's what we should be doing. So this does not need a conflict. We just need to clarify this message, because unfortunately I think there's some folks that have taken that sentence that's repeated twice in statute and have used it to make you do things that are contradictory to the Constitution. We can't do that anymore. And we're trying to set it straight. We don't want you to break state law and be bulldozing trees and tipping them into the creek. I don't believe you can do that today. You know, I take that back. Sometimes they'll want to fall in the creek. They pull it out. It's life. You know, I get all that. But anyway, thank you.
Members, I would like to take just a moment and provide some broad direction. It is the intent to get language together that we can pass on as a conference committee report today. So I do want to keep that as kind of our end goal and make sure we're working towards that as we do this. With that, any further discussion on Section 8, B, and D? Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just wondering if this language stays as it is. And I don't think probably nobody in this room wants us to start logging right down to the shore on the stream. I'm just, and I don't believe that's going to happen, whether we put something more in here or not. I'm just wondering if we left the language like it is, if we could establish on the floor of the House and the Senate, establish some legislative intent of what we expect to happen out on the ground relative to the management of these trust lands. For instance, say something about what I just said, that we expect there to be best management practices used on school trust fund land, and we're not looking to avoid all that, to just establish some legislative intent in the event that somebody does decide to sue, they'll know what the intent of the legislature was. The intent of the legislature wasn't to cut right down to the shoreline on a lake or on a stream, and that might actually, and I'm not the only one about an attorney, you don't want to be an attorney, don't even want to be a carpenter anymore.
Are they working on this?
But it's, you know, we talk a lot about legislative intent around here when we pass things, and it seems like we could establish what we think some intent is relative to this provision on the floor that might prevent a potent or have some impact, prevent or have some impact on what might be a lawsuit down the road.
And I think, Senator Bach, I agree with you on that, and I would almost argue that we've done that already. I think Representative McNamara was very articulate about it and your comments as well. Commissioner, any thoughts?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, just a last thought. I think it would be very easy to just include in here that it's consistent with this provision, so that it references back to the provision that says consistent with solid natural resource policy. My understanding of legislative intent, and I would defer to one of the counsel here, is that in judicial proceedings around statute, legislative intent is not considered. So I don't know to what extent it has any standing.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Senator Bach and to Representative McNamara's comments today, when we first started this endeavor, when there was snow on the ground and there wasn't much of it this year, but the big concern was, oh my goodness, if you take the stuff out of the control of the DNR and you treat this differently, you handle this differently, my goodness, all of the rules and the regulations and the laws and the kinds of things aren't going to apply to these lands. We're not going to be on the same ground or the same footing with private versus these lands and what have you. And basically what we said is all this is going to do is establish a different oversight process at that time. We've refined that, but these lands are going to be subject to the same rules, regulations that any other lands would be in the state of Minnesota, period, no ifs, ands, or buts. And that means that you can't and shouldn't go out and do things that aren't prudent and sound practices, as well as against the law or against the Constitution, state or federal. Enough said.
Representative Simon.
Well, I just wanted to weigh in on the legislative intent. You know, both are right here. The commissioner's partially right, and others are partially right. The way that, and I know this because of said a thing or two about a couple constitutional amendments around here, so I've looked into it. And so the way it works in Minnesota, and I think most states, is if the language is clear, so the court thinks that the language is clear, if it's explicit, if it can be discerned just by looking at the language, then it stops there. But if there's ambiguity in the language, then the court will go to the next step and consider legislative intent. So, you know, it never hurts to get intent on the record, but they may not reach it if the judges think that the language is clear. So that's it. You go to the language first and only go the next step if the court determines. We really can't tell. It's a little murky. That's kind of it.
Any further discussion? Section 8, B, and D. Senator Bach.
Is there some language that can be put in there that says where a maximum return cannot be accomplished due to natural resource something, that the trust is made whole through some other mechanism, that where you use those site level guidelines or something, and they're actually, the cost of that is to not maximize the potential, is there some other way that the trust is made whole through, there ought to be a way to do that.
Thank you, Senator.
Yeah, I don't know.
And I know Council Knopf is in another conference committee right now, so I would wonder if Ms. Kelly would have anything that, any thoughts on that?
Mr. Chair, members, I'd probably want to think about that proposal. Alternatively, you could do sort of what the commissioner was suggesting, and after possible on line 7.23, just repeat that language that we've been talking about, while maintaining sound natural resource conservation and management principles. Alternatively, we could go to the section that requires the report back and, for, you know, and kind of removing designations around July 1st, 2018, and modifying that section and kind of modeling the language similar to that language there that requires compensation or, you know, some sort of trade or change in designation or policy in this particular case to get at what Senator Bach is getting at.
Senator Bach.
I think if we could find a way to make the trust whole, where we did something that didn't maximize the revenue, I mean, everybody wins. The department gets what they need. They lay out the timber sale how they want. The trust is made whole through some other avenue. And I would think the department wouldn't want to do too much of that, because that money to keep the trust whole comes from somewhere. I'm trying to think of what piece of revenue might be available, but there must be something.
General fund.
Offered by the commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, that already occurred to me.
Salary.
That already occurred to me.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Bach, maybe this is something. It's two-pronged. It's part to the commissioner and part to Senator Bach. The first thing, I guess, I would ask to the commissioner, and I want to comment on a solution idea that I might have that I think we can get to where we want to be on that. Commissioner, this committee never happened. This legislation never came forward. What would you do today in sensitive situations like that?
Commissioner Landwehr.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we would manage consistent with sound natural resource policies. We would leave the buffer, because that is prescribed by both our best management practices and the sustainable forestry guidelines in the certification process.
Representative O'Driscoll?
Then, using that as a policy statement, why wouldn't we have you share with the Legislative Commission that would be a policy statement that you would want to use as a guideline in helping to manage? I don't think that we want to put everything in statute, because these books that we've got over here are getting pretty big and many volumes of it, because we're trying to address every item in here. And maybe that's what we need to do, is help with that conversation back and forth with the Executive Director, the Director, and with your department and with the Legislative Commission, and establishing those policies and guidelines, and that helped being the guiding tool. I understand, and I think your concern is legitimate, but I think we can work through some of those kinds of things with policy, and if it's not, then we just continue to work through the legislative process. We've got a commission there to hone and work together and lock arms and get her done.
Commissioner Landwehr.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, perhaps that's the way to go. My only, you know, observation here is people who have not been in these discussions looked at this morning, so don't have this history of how we got to this point. When they look at this, they think this overrides the consistent with solid natural resource policies provision, and it would be an easy fix to just reference that in here to make sure that that was not an issue. But if in fact that isn't the intent, then we could go to the commission and make sure that we got their blessing.
Any further discussion?
Follow up on
Representative O'Driscoll.
Commissioner, I don't know if it's necessarily getting the blessing. I think it's coming out and saying, here are the 10 guidelines that we're going to be using to do environmental practices that are going to be sound, that are going to be in the long-term interest, that are going to be maximizing revenue and keeping all that entire orchestra tuned and on the same page of music. And then the commission can and the department can say yes, no, maybe on some of those kinds of things. And I think that provides you cover from the department that, yep, here's what I did, and here's, you know, principles 2, 4, and 6 are applying here, and here's what we did.
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I think you spelled it out again that you currently are protecting the streams as part of the certification and best management practices, and that potentially we're sending you mixed messages that that's not good enough by us putting this other language in that says you're maybe supposed to manage it differently than those processes that you're already doing and the Constitution. I would say we should definitely not put more language like that in, but if your folks come back and say you think it would be good for the state to have additional protection, here's what we propose. And then to Senator Bach's point, okay, where are we going to get revenue from to make that work? Because that's above and beyond even the certification best management practices. That may make – you're already doing it under the processes that you mentioned, and you don't need that other language. So.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Mr. Commissioner.
Again, I think if it is the intention of the legislature to maintain the current practice of maintaining using best natural resource policies, I think we ought to be explicit about it. If we are not explicit about it, I think we set ourselves up for a problem down the line when the administrator comes and looks and sees us leaving a buffer and says, well, tell me in Section 8, B and D, where it says you shall leave a buffer or you shall use certification. I think if truly we want to maintain the current protections, we ought to be explicit about that.
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. But, Commissioner, in my tours over the last summer, a number of times your department specifically said, we left that snag there and those little group of trees over here for certified forest practices and best management practices. We did that and that already to meet this. You're already doing the kind of stuff you need to do that's good for the environment under what you already have. If you're telling me your people want to do more, what we're already doing out there is not good enough for the school trust, we got to do more. It's like, how are we going to justify taking revenue away from the kids? Because I'm assuming it would take revenue away from them if we now were going to do things differently, cut less trees or put it on a different rotation that has the trees rot more instead of getting milled. I'm trying to understand what's driving the ship here.
Commissioner Langwehr.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Representative McNamara, I think we're looking at this differently. What I'm saying is my staff believe that this provision eliminates those requirements to do what we're doing right now.
Representative McNamara.
Well, just to clarify, are we eliminating your best management practices or the certification process that you are enrolled in now?
My staff,
Commissioner Landwehr.
My staff believe that this language could drive that, yes.
Okay, do you want clarification that we allow you to be part of the certification forest process and still have best management practices? I don't have any problem with that.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, if we just reiterated that provision that's consistent with sound natural resource practices.
Representative McNamara.
Commissioner Landwehr, that is already twice on one page in statute, and as far as I'm concerned, it shouldn't be there either time. Because if we're not managing the forest for sound natural resource purposes, what in the world are we doing? And to say, well, now we're going to write that a third time so we all feel better. We're going to manage the forest for sound natural resource purposes. My goodness gracious, when I was out visiting the Northwoods, you were doing that over and over and over. And I'm sorry.
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What I hope that the way that this is, first of all, is Mr. Commissioner, I just want to really reiterate to people in the room,
We did not try to take away the sound natural resource language. And if we really wanted to override that, that's what we would have done. It's been talked about here for many, 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 many years. And there are, and I have examples of emails of DNR people out on the ground that use that statute to do whatever they want on school trust lands because it falls under sound management practices. So what I would argue is that this just balances it, that everything has to be a decision. Now, if anybody anywhere made the decision to cut those trees next to a trout stream, that someday we are going to be paid for our fair share of providing that opportunity to Minnesota trout fishermen, then I would say that is not on page 7, line 23, that is not prudent or profitable. To Chairman O'Driscoll's comment, for the long term. It's not for the short term, actually, neither for the long term. And so we had no intentions of that, but to do that one more time right here, I think really tips the scales once again. And then we really end up into ambiguous faithfulness, obligations. And this policy and purpose is not to define how DNR does the work on the ground on school trust lands. It is to define how a trustee thinks about their trust obligations and to make sure that that is in statute so that it does provide a balance. The Department of Natural Resources is all about preservation, and we understand that and we respect that. But we also need in statute some of the trust language to help balance that. And I think that's what this whole committee was about, is just to make sure that both parties have their say. And we have kept the DNR in this. If we would have taken the DNR out and not managing the land, then I could see some of those bells going off and alarms going off. But this is just clarifying what is already true and demonstrated in trust case law.
Members, I do want to keep us moving along here. I have no more names on my list. So seeing that, we can move on to the next one. Commissioner, your next concern was on page 9, if I'm not mistaken, lines 9.24 to 9.26. If you would please, for the committee, just reiterate what that concern was.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this provision requires that the administrator submit his or her budget to the legislature prior to submitting it to the governor. Since this is an executive level position, that's backwards from the normal process. The executive level administrator should submit his or her budget to the governor first and then to the commission.
Any comments, questions concerning the commissioner's hang-ups with this part of the bill? Maybe we can ask Senator Olson.
Well, just reflecting on that, it's technically not presenting it to the legislature, but if this, I realize the Legislative Permanent School Fund Commission is made up of legislators, and I believe that director does answer to them somewhat, that reviewing it with them before submitting it doesn't necessarily seem to be out of order. I mean, it's not. The governor does prepare the budget, which ultimately comes to the legislature. But if this legislative commission also has some trustee responsibilities, it's almost, I don't know who's advising who there in that case. But I don't know. It doesn't strike me as being out of order, but perhaps I could be convinced otherwise. Because I do understand it's the governor that does submit that, but that has to somehow go there first before it's presented to it. In this case, it might just help clear up if there's if the commission feels that there's been something overlooked or wanted to question it, it might be a stronger position to present it to the governor.
Commissioner Lindsay?
Mr. Chairman, members of committee, again, the position as appointed by the governor should be an executive position. We've talked about some of the challenge in identifying the hierarchy there, but the review by the commission suggests legislative authority over the budget, and that violates that separation of powers.
Mm-hmm. Well, I understand.
Well, members, I think maybe this would be an opportune time to bring staff in, and I think the word maybe that we're trying to get at here is review, the definition of review, and whether that implies any type of what would we call it, an override? Maybe we can get council to speak to that.
Mr. Chair, members, I read this plainly, I wouldn't think this would give the commission any approval or authority over it, but they would be able to look at it. And I think the public inspection piece is, allowing the public to kind of chime in as well. So I don't see this as an approval piece.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This thought occurs to me that, and it really came to light when Commissioner Landwehr said that separation of powers. Right now, when the governor submits a budget, each of the different departments are tied in some way, shape, or form to a legislative committee in the House and the Senate. And if they happen to be fiscal committees, they're going to get to the governor's budget and then begin to review and comment and cobble together what they think that may be. Perhaps that's what should also go to the legislative commission and following that legislative process, and then obviously it would just be to the extent of how you would choose to or look to expend those trust funds, because that's where that legislative commission would have jurisdiction over the school trust lands.
Commissioner Landwehr.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, again, this suggests that everybody sees it before the governor. This is the governor's appointee. The governor surely should have some initial influence over the budget, and that is the fundamental problem here, is that the governor, this is the governor's appointee. This is a part of the governor's budget. The governor surely has to have the first say over what that budget looks like.
I think, Mr. Commissioner, along those lines, though, we are looking for a certain level of independence here as well. I think that's the only way you're truly going to get checks and balances in this process and actually have the ability to treat these lands as separate. And I understand what you're saying. I'm sure that to a certain extent the governor will have an influence over obviously picking this director, but maybe even a little bit more than that in this process. Any other comments? Representative Dietrich.
Yeah, I would. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, I think once again, these are trust lands. And they are to be managed as trust lands. Mm-hmm. And for them, for the people who are charged with managing and developing a budget and looking at the short-term and long-term plan for the trust lands, I don't think that there is anything wrong with them going into a collaborative relationship that we've established in this bill and saying, what are some of the needs and what are the things that I'm not missing or that I am missing or that have not been brought up, and bringing those to the governor as the trustee. It isn't a government agency, and it is acting as the trustee of these lands. And they are supposed to act to a degree independent. I don't think they're leaving the governor out of the process by any means. But this is a different process. This is just not another government entity. It is the trust law and trust obligations that that would drive this budget, not what the governor wants. And the governor would definitely have the chance to veto or guide or add to or anything like that, but it all has to be under title of acting as the trustee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the
Commission. Commissioner
Landwehr. With all due respect, this is another government agency. This is an executive branch agency housed in the Division of Management and Budget, appointed by and reporting to the governor. This is a government agency, and it as an executive branch agency, it will perform as all other executive branch agencies would.
Any other thoughts and comments looking at page 9.24 to 9.26? Seeing none, if we can move on to the next concern that the commissioner had. We are looking on page 10, line 10.1 to line 10.3. Commissioner.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and I'll reference back to page 8, lines 8.1 to 8.12 as well. This provision, which I didn't realized last night, it was one of those things I noticed today, provides for the director to submit individual leases, sales, or enhancements, or excuse me, exchanges to the commissioner. Individual leases, sales, or exchanges to the commissioner. Individual projects. It is a completely different level of operation than what is provided for on the previous page where it talks about a 10-year strategic plan and a 25-year management framework. This suggests that the trust advisor could come to the commissioner with a lakeshore lot project that the trust administrator thinks ought to be sold and present that to commissioner. And that is a level of involvement that I had never presumed this trust administrator would have. I presumed this was going to be at the programmatic level and at the strategic level. The trust administrator looks at lakeshore lots we own and says, okay, the department should undertake a process to start selling these lakeshore lots. Not that thou shalt sell this lot on Whitefish Lake tomorrow, and if you don't, we're going to go to the executive council. And that, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, relates to the other part that in the appeal process under 8.9 to 8.11, if the trust administrator brings that individual lease, sale, or exchange to me and I disagree for whatever reason, it goes to the executive council for resolution. So this puts the trust administrator in the position of dictating my day-to-day activities. And that is not anything I had presumed we were going to be talking about.
Well, my thought on that, Commissioner, is that it would ultimately put the executive committee in that position. And I think if you look at the makeup of this new director, we've put somebody there that is has a significant salary. We've also allowed them to have a staff of five persons. I think our hopes was that they would be doing a little bit more than the 10-year and 25-year strategic plans. And any of the members can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I think we were hoping they were going to get a little bit deeper into it than that. I would also comment that this is strictly a recommendation. As you mentioned, there is no reason you could not deny that. Ultimately, you would still have the ability to move forward with those leases. When I think of this provision, especially the section on page 10.1 through 10.3, I know Senator Bach had made some comments, what seems to be like a year ago now, as we've been working on this over the last couple of days, but about the timber industry and a sawmill, up in his neck of the woods, and how providing that lease would be extremely beneficial for all the parties involved. I see that process working very, very well. I don't know. Do any other members have thoughts or comments on that? Commissioner Landry.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the example you just gave, in my mind, is a programmatic example, not a project-specific example. If the department should be going into leasing, then I think that's the type of recommendation I would envision coming from a trust administrator. As the department is doing everything now, say, by individually marking, the department ought to look at leasing, and here's some places you could look. That is, in my mind, that's a programmatic recommendation. I have absolutely no problem with that whatsoever. And if this trust administrator drives up to International Falls, starts talking to Boise, and starts cutting a deal for a lease, I have major reservations with that.
Well, I think, and Commissioner, I'll go back to what I mentioned before. We need to remember that this is just the submittal of a proposal. There is no, you still would have the ultimate decision whether to move forward with that or not.
Representative, Mr. Chairman, that is not
Commissioner Landwehr.
That's not correct, because when you look at subdivision 3 on top of page 8 that says in the case that the administrator disagrees with the commissioner's recommendation, he or she takes it to the executive council. So it is not just a commissioner takes it or leaves it. It is an appealed process.
That is correct, Commissioner. We do allow for that appeal process here, and I think that was one of the things that, I think especially some of our House folks were extremely excited about, because that provided just a little bit of comfort, a little bit more authority, and allowed us to ultimately keep the lands within the department. And I think that's kind of, you know, we mentioned this a little bit yesterday as we were going through the process. I think that's a pretty critical part of this, that appeals process. So, Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, I think the reason that I would not be willing to back off some of this language, although I share your concerns, I would not want to be presented with a piece of land every day. This is what I want you to do with this piece of land, this land, that land. But I think that that presumes not a trustful working relationship, and I would hope that whoever we would hire would have a very collaborative working relationship with you and the department, because we all have the same trust obligations, the same fiduciary responsibilities. But even as I read the legislative audit report, they talked about the fact that the DNR, and of course this is way before your time, has been very slow to exchange and sell land that should be. And in fact, that most of the time where there was ever a land sale, it was initiated by the landowner instead of a long-term plan on how to manage the school trust lands. So for myself, I see this language as kind of, whether you're there or not, as staying on a path of we have to be systematic in continuing to look at all the parcels of land, however, and looking to see are there better ways to lease, or should they be put up for sale and owned by somebody else who can further the mission or exchange. And I think when we have a track record like we have had in this state, I think that something is needed, and I think that this does the job.
Commissioner Landwehr, any closing thoughts?
I think if the administrator and the commissioner got together and said, here's a number of projects we'd like to take on, and here DNR will take off on these, and here the administrator will take off on these, I see that as a very useful function for the administrator, to give additional capacity to do those things that the DNR hasn't done, perhaps because they haven't had the capacity. But this ability to just bring projects to the department, have the department react to them, and if the department objects, then go to the executive council, means that they are dictating our day-to-day work. And that I find just very challenging. I'm not suggesting the entire appeal process needs to be changed. It's those second and third lines that are problematic, because it gives the administrator the opportunity to appeal if the administrator brings a project to the commissioner objects. So it's that last subdivision, at subdivision 4, and those two lines that I find problematic.
Any other comments from the members? We are going to Representative McNamara.
Can I just ask, thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I was thinking that this would be very limited and they would be in a bigger scope along the lines of probably what you're hopeful of, that they wouldn't deal with one lot on Whitefish, but they might deal with maybe in a general way all the lakeshore on Lake Vermilion, which is what Representative Rukavina often talks about. Does the limiting of it to include only the director and 5 other employees, with how broad of a mission they're going to have with minerals and timber and everything, won't they have to focus on a more big picture program? I mean, short of an antagonistic relationship, which I believe would get taken care of by the governor, if they were just trying, if either one of you were trying to jab at each other, wouldn't the limit in how few people are there and the scope of what they need to accomplish kind of dictate that they wouldn't be able to do what you're concerned about?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think the reality is they will be so busy they won't be able to do that, but this gives them the authority to do that, and that's my concern.
Representative McNamara?
Well, I realize it gives them the authority, but in their obligation to look at the bigger picture, isn't the realistic thing that's going to happen is they're not going to do that when what they're doing, or if you had some suggestions of how we could fix that. I just don't see that as being real at this point.
Commissioner Landwehr.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I can certainly envision a situation where somebody brings something to the knowledge of the director and says, look, there is this trust land that's sitting up on Whitefish Lake that has one cabin on it at the end of a road, and you know what? You could subdivide that and sell that and make a bunch of money, and that person could be a realtor, it could be somebody who wants a place on there. And at that point in time, I think it's probably the trust administrator's responsibility to do something with that. Whether or not they have the capacity with it, I don't know that they could drop it. They could pencil a quick note to the commissioner, say, Commissioner, you ought to take this project on. All of a sudden, it becomes my problem. So I do think, again, I think you're correct. I think with the amount of work that's provided in here, I think that's going to keep six people very busy, but it doesn't preclude them from doing that type of work. And it's the authority to do that that creates the problem for me. It's not not necessarily the reality of what happens. At some point in time, you know, even commissioners get caught up. I had a day once where I had all my emails gone, by God, and I sat there and I thought, what do I do now? And this person will eventually get to that point as well. And at that point in time is when the shenanigans could start.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Commissioner, when that day comes again, I could use a little help.
I'll send you an email.
With that, members, I would like to move us to a place where we can take a vote on this language. I know that Senator Bach had some further questions on the on page 9, the area that the commissioner addressed, 9.24 to 9.26. Senator Bach, did you want to go ahead and express those concerns?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure how necessary those lines are, 9.24 to 9.26. I'm not sure how good an idea it is to start putting pieces of the governor's budget out for the public to see before the governor has submitted his budget to the legislature. I don't know what we really get out of that. I don't know why we need that, I guess.
Members, any discussion? Representative McNamara.
Well, Senator Bach makes a good point. What if we just delete the prior to submitting the budget to the governor? I mean, it's probably not a bad idea to. I mean, their budget is kind of proprietary in some respects. It probably is fluid and changes and stuff. And it might be a logistic challenge.
Yeah. Representative McNamara, would you like to offer that as an amendment?
Well, yes, if that's in order, Mr. Chair. I wasn't sure how you wanted to proceed.
Yeah, I think we're to that point right now. I would like to, as I mentioned, work us to a place where we can take a vote on this. Could you go ahead and repeat that amendment?
Well, I would defer to Senator Bach. It was his idea. I don't want to steal it from him.
Mr. Chairman, I think Senator Bach. Line 9.25, after the word director, you would delete prior to, and on line 0.26, you would delete everything up to and including the semicolon.
So, members,
I think we probably leave and. Council can tell me. Do we leave and in?
If we could get Ms. Kelly to comment on that.
Ms. Taylor.
I'm sorry, Ms. Taylor. Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, members, you'd actually want to keep the semicolon so the amendment would read on line 9.25, delete prior to, then on line 9.26, delete submitting the budget to the governor.
That's my amendment.
Right. Members, we have a motion before us. All those in favor, say aye.
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 All those opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, why do we have the words public inspection in here?
Where?
On lines 9.25. Submit to the legislative permanent school fund compensation for review. An annual budget. Why do we have for public inspection? What would be the point of that? Why is that necessary? I guess somebody maybe can tell me why that's necessary. It's not necessary. I don't know why we need
Senator Carlson.
And Mr. Chair, to that point, how would you carry it out? I mean, what would is there some prescription to how to get it to the public? So I think that's a good point.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My anticipation would be no more than comfort language is why that's in there, of a transparency issue. Any document that the governor would submit to the legislature or any of those other kinds of budgetary documents would be, unless they've otherwise been embargoed for negotiation or preparation purposes, would be available for public inspection.
Any other thoughts, comments from the members?
Well,
Senator Carlson.
So, Mr. Chair, I guess I would offer an oral amendment that would strike on line 9.25 and public inspection.
Representative McNamara, to the amendment.
Well, I was just going to speak. I'm assuming when the Legislative Permanent School Fund sees the annual budget, it will be on the table in the committee room, and it'll be online and such, so it would be for public. I just would want to confirm on the record that we're not hiding it from the public. It will already be available to the public, and we're removing some confusion by noting it here that people may think it's not, actually, and that we need to, or that the rest of the budget wasn't available or whatever. So I would support the Carlson Amendment.
Any other comments to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. To the bill. Any other comments? Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And if it'd be appropriate at this time, I've had some concerns and had some discussion with some of the DNR in regards to some of the mining and the current in leases and such, and wanted to just if I could ask, and I'm assuming it would be Director Kramka potentially, or excuse me, the commissioner, just in regards to understanding there's some new technology out there. One producer in the Grand Rapids area has done some, it's called magnetation. And I just wanted to understand and get on understanding of what we're doing and how it could affect that process that may be expanding and having other people ask about it. So, Mr. Chair, if I could ask Director Kramka, I believe there's a firm doing this in a few places in northern Minnesota that's going back in on the spoils where they're a little higher grade or in some of the spoils and using a process called, I believe his company is actually called magnetation, doing this fine powder into concentration. And are some of those potentially on school trust land? Or are there piles available for this process potentially?
Director Kramka, before you answer that, if you could please introduce yourself for the tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Larry Kramka, I'm the director for the Lands and Minerals Division of the Department of Natural Resources. Yes, Magnetation is a company that's homegrown in Minnesota that was an entrepreneurial start with a technology that's able to take old oxidized tailings basin material. This is different than taconite. It's actually a different portion of the iron ore, and process those old tailings into iron fines that are able to be used in the steel industry.
Representative McNamara.
And I'm sorry, the other part of your question was, yes, some of these are on school trust lands or school trust material that has been stockpiled from, you know, past mining operations.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Director Kramka, you would, when you would go to negotiate as a trustee, and I'll refer to you today if it's okay as a trustee. You work for the DNR, who currently the commissioner is the trustee, and I'd imagine you get involved as the director in this department, get involved in those leases. You have a responsibility as the trustee to try and do what's best for the state and to see what is the best deal we can do. And part of that would be to evaluate past practices of the potential people you're dealing with, and how have they worked with the state? Have we had any experience with them? have they done a good job or have they done a poor job? Have they not done their part of restoration work or whatever? Those would all be the things you would be involved in. And then also, do you take into account how competitive it is, the market, and who else can do it? And then what are actually the tools that, under current law, just real quickly, you can work with someone, you have to do competitive in some situations. Just isn't there about three options that you would have? This would most likely be lease, so I suppose it could be sale too. Can you quickly just tell us what would be your options in both a lease and or a sale as a fiduciary, your responsibility to try and do the best? What would be the options you could have?
Director Kramka.
Mr. Chair and members, first of all, let me just say that mineral material for the state is not something that actually is sold. It's leased. The sale of minerals is actually not something that is provided for. So we always lease the mineral side of the equation. In the current situation, putting our trustee hats on, we look for opportunities to take the mineral resources that are out there, whether they be on school trust or university trust or tax forfeited lands, and make those available to people who can actually utilize those materials to produce the royalties back into those various accounts. We're not in the business of leasing to folks that aren't going to ultimately actually pay a royalty. That's counterproductive at this point. So when you get into the situation of deciding how to go forward, one of the conditions that you look for is there a land position that's already established? So, for instance, if you're looking at a large taconite facility that's already in existence and they have been mining and already have a pit, they already have a land position established, a mineral position established, I'm not going to be doing anything in the interest of the trust to try to lease something in the middle of that area to a different company who then would have to come in and try to negotiate with that company. And so in those cases, we go to what's called a negotiated lease. Those leases are negotiated with the company or the interest that has the ability already established to utilize that lease and turn that into a royalty to the state. In some cases, there may not be any land position established, and so then you would go to some type of a public auction, public sale of those materials, and you would advertise those leases on the open market and look for competitive bids to come back in. I don't remember if there was another question. I'm sorry.
Representative McNamara.
No, I think Director Kramka, you did a good job there. Would you have a fiduciary responsibility to take into account people's track record and their performance record? How do you weigh that? Is there any kind of criteria you have, or do you take that into account, the probability that this will come to fruition, that it will happen, and is that subjective, or how is that done?
Mr. Chair,
Director Kramka,
members, yes, as part of any of the either the negotiations or a public sale, part of the criteria that gets established is, are you capable? Are you a company that has the wherewithal to actually execute the lease? Do you have the ability to do the reclamation that would come at the end of that when and if a permit was issued? And also the timeliness of that. Oftentimes leases are negotiated or bid in a way that actually requires some type of a performance guarantee. If we know that, for instance, there are multiple parties that are able to execute a lease and actually produce those royalties back into the accounts, then we're also going to try to get some competitiveness based on how soon are you actually going to do that. someone who can do it sooner may have a better competitive advantage than somebody else. But, of course, all of those things are weighed into that kind of matrix of decision-making for short and long-term benefits to the trust.
Okay, so
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you would need to take into account what I call the time value of money. If you had someone up and running and they were there with the potential to come right in and begin to put money back into the trust sooner rather than later, if somebody was there, that would matter to you?
I'm sorry, Director Kramka.
Mr. Chair and members, it certainly is part of the equation. It isn't the only thing because, of course, leases run for some period of time as well, and so the lease takes into account the time value of money through some escalator clauses and things like that. But what we would not want to see is, for instance, somebody getting a lease, paying the minimum rent, and locking up that material for some period of time, producing nothing when someone else could actually be up and running and producing something. And so when you set up the bid package or you do those negotiations, you're looking for those kinds of companies that can actually execute on the production side. And there's a production guarantee that is typically put into a lot of the leases in that case.
Thank you.
Members, any other comments, questions for Director Kramka? Seeing none, to the conference committee report as a whole. Seeing none, do I have a motion to adopt conference committee report on House File 2244, CCRHF 2244?
As amended.
As amended.
I will move that.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Motion prevails. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a 4-plus-hour drive home, so is there some idea what kind of time we'd have for signatures? Because I know you want signatures before we go, and I'm willing to wait because I know this is important. But
Senator Carlson, I'll leave that for staff. I do know we've made a couple of changes, which means this will have to go back to the reviser.
Mr. Chair and members, I don't want to promise anything. We did have a preliminary final report prepared. We will need to make the change. I would assume it wouldn't take very long, but I don't want to make any promises for the reviser's office.
I appreciate that.
So
Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair, where will we be meeting or how will we be notified so that we know where to come and sign and get out of town?
I think,
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Bob.
My experience with this is the easiest thing is for the individual members to go right by the reviser's office. And once they're done, they'll be there, and a person could sign them right in the office. Then nobody's going to have to chase them around the building on a Friday evening.
I like that idea, Senator Bach. Senator Carlson, is that okay with you?
That's fine, Mr. Chair. So someone will text us or call us or
when it's prepared. Yeah. People just like it.
We will do that. So we'll leave it. What we'll do is we'll leave that up to the prospective chairs to contact their members when they get notification that is finalized, and we'll just have all of the members go by the reviser's office. Are the House members okay with that? Representative O'Driscoll.
As one of the respective chairs, who's notifying me so that I can notify my people?
Representative O'Driscoll, I will take that responsibility on myself.
I just you said that our staffs will be notifying us or we'll get a notification. I've got Ms. Taylor telling me that she'll notify me, so I just want to make sure that we're not holding it up on our end.
Sounds done. Great.
You're done.
Any other closing comments, Representative O'Driscoll?
See, maybe Representative McNamara.
Representative McNamara.
Comment.
No, I was just wondering if Mr. Chair, I'm thinking we're still on the floor, but the Senate is done. Okay.
Well, with that, members, I would just personally like to say thank you to Commissioner Landwehr. Thank you for all your time over the last 48 hours. It has been greatly appreciated, and I know you've helped instrumentally shaping this language, and I think we have a fantastic bill. I'd like to thank my co-chair, Representative O'Driscoll, all of his House members, obviously also my Senate conferees. Thank you so much for your time over the last few days. And with that, the committee will stand adjourned.
the only change.
Oh, boy.